Just an incredible program tonight. David Politis with us, missing 411. We will be back, talk a little bit more. We'll talk about some possibilities. Why is this happening? And we'll take your calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, David Politis with us. David, let's get into these final two cases, and then let's kick around some possibilities here. Then we'll take our calls. Dennis Lloyd Martin, what happened to Dennis?
So of all the cases I've ever written about, this is the one that disturbs me the most, George.
Disturbs you. Okay.
June 14th, 1969, 6 years old. Dennis went with his dad, his grandfather, his nine-year-old brother into Great Smoky Mountain National Park, and they hiked into an area called Spence Field. This sits on the Appalachian Trail right on the border of North Carolina and Tennessee. And the two boys were running around playing on this big field with their dad and grandpa sitting there watching. And up walks a family and says, hey, can our boys play together? And you're not going to read about this anywhere, and it won't make any sense to you now, as it made no sense to me. But the family reaches down to shake hands with Mr. Martin, and they say, oh, yeah, our last name's the Martins, too. What would be those odds, George?
Pretty high, I would think, but possible.
So they said, yeah, could the kids run around and play together? They said, sure. Both families are sitting down in the grass. Boys are running around. They start playing a game of hide-and-seek. Mr. Martin is one of the sharpest men you'll ever meet. And he sees his son run behind a bush right on the edge of the field, right where the wilderness starts. And everyone's playing hide-and-seek, and he's watching. And everybody comes out after the end of the game, and his son doesn't come out. He walks over to the bush. His son isn't there, and he takes off on a dead run down the Appalachian Trail for 2 miles. He doesn't find him. He comes back, and he tells his dad to go down and get more rangers because they need help. And they go down. This happened at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. By the time rangers got there, it was about 5, and by 8:30, it was raining like cats and dogs. Now, as the boys were playing this game of hide-and-seek, 2,000 feet below them, in an area in Cates Cove called Rowans, R-O-W-A-N-S, Creek, a family asks a ranger where they can go to see some bear. The ranger tells them to go up Rowans Creek about a mile, mile and a half, and they should see some wildlife. This family, their last name is K-E-Y. It's the Key family, and it's Key for a reason. The family walked up the valley, and they report hearing an enormous, sickening scream louder than they could ever imagine. At about the same time, their son says to the dad, look it, Dad, there's a bear running in the bushes up there on the hill. The dad says, no, son, I don't think that's a bear. They thought it was a man hiding behind the trees in the bushes, hiding from them. Now, this is simultaneous or just after Dennis disappeared, maybe an hour after. Now, obviously, the Key family didn't know anything about that Dennis had disappeared the hour previously or 2 hours previously, but what they were seeing was odd. But they didn't think much about it other than it was really weird.
Right.
So they go home. And the next day on the front page of the Knoxville Times is a picture of Dennis Martin and this disappearance. And Mr. Key says, well, the time frame and the distance could make some sense. So he read in the paper that the FBI had an agent monitoring the case. So he calls the FBI and he says, hey, I'll meet you at the park. I'll show you exactly where I saw what I saw. And the agent tells him, no. Myself and a National Park Service ranger will meet you outside the park at a different location, which makes no sense. Until you understand that the Park Service and the FBI had an agreement with Mr. Martin. In 2 months, the man never left the park. He wanted to know about everything that was happening with the search
for him.
Every detail. And he had an agreement that he was going to get told that. 3 days after the FBI and the Park Service meet with the Key family, a reporter for the Knoxville Times hears about it third hand from a law enforcement source and confronts the FBI, and they admit that they went to interview this person, and they admit to what they were said. So the press reporter tracks down the Key family and gets the interview, and then tells Mr. Martin, well, he goes livid, why are you hiding this from me? And the FBI just says, because it's irrelevant, the time frames don't matter, and it's impossible. Well, standing next to Mr. Martin at the time was one of the trackers for the Park Service, a guy named Dwight McCarter, who ended up being the head tracker for the Park Service when he retired. And an interview that we got about this story, Dwight said he knew the FBI was lying when they said it. He said, I know the area in the woods like the back of my hand. We could walk that in an hour and a half, and we could do this. So he and Mr. Martin the next day walked the path from where his son disappeared to where the people made the sighting, and they prove it could be done. So as this is going on and they're in the middle of that first week, in fly a couple Huey helicopters filled with Green Berets.
Here they come again.
Here they come again. Now this time, McCarter tells me that it was the oddest thing he'd ever seen. The FBI or the Green Berets didn't want anything to do with the Park Service. They didn't want any escorts through the park who knew the park and knew the area that wanted to be searched. The Green Berets set up their own telecommunications system and tell everyone to just stay away from them. They'll search on their own. They were there for a week. Nobody knows what they found, what they were looking for other than Dennis. This is another one of those things where we file Freedom of Information Act requests. Never got anything. Now, Mr. Martin was livid because he didn't feel anybody was telling him the truth. And Dwight McCarter was the one guy he trusted because McCarter told him this distance we could do it. They did do it. They proved the time frames worked. Obviously, the biggest clue in this disappearance is what the Key family saw. Now, Mr. Martin won't talk to the press and won't talk to law enforcement. I've tracked him down, and he lives in the same house that he lived in at the time his boy disappeared. And myself and another researcher just went cold, knocked on his door. He came to the door, I explained who I was, and he said, Dave, my wife and I made a promise that we wouldn't talk about this anymore. It's ruined my life. It's ruined our family's life. Well, I explained to him that I came here from California. I guaranteed to him I knew more about this story than anybody, and would he just give me 15 minutes of his time? He looked at his wife. He closed the door. He stepped outside on the porch, and we had a conversation. And I asked him, I said, what's the one or two things that I should know about this case that isn't in the press, that nobody wants to talk about it, but what you know? He says, well, there's a couple. He says, you know that family, what they saw on the hill? I said, yeah. He said, well, the newspaper and the Park Service won't tell anybody this, but when they saw that thing on the hill, it had something on its shoulder, and nobody will talk about it.
Like it was carrying him?
Carrying his son. That's what the implication was.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, he says, Dave, do you know about the other disappearances in the park and the surrounding area? And I said, actually, I know about 12 of them, and I named them. And he says, well, do you know about the FBI monitoring those cases? And I named the FBI agent. I said, yeah, he's been on all the cases. And he says, do you know what happened to that agent? I said, no. He says, he committed suicide.
Oh.
Now, I never put that in the book until I validated it from another FBI agent in Tennessee, and it's true.
What would have pushed him to that?
The million-dollar question. Now, we went up and we interviewed Dwight McCarter, and I asked Dwight, I said, so with everything you know about Dennis Martin, what do you think happened? He says, I think he got abducted. And I said, well, how come the Park Service won't talk about it? He says, that's the million-dollar question.
Now, when we hear that word abducted, David, it's got several possibilities. What was he talking about?
He thought something forcefully took Dennis Martin off that hill.
But he's not sure what that something was.
Well, now there's the interesting part of the story. Before I get there, though, when I did a Freedom of Information Act for this report, it was huge, and I went through it six times. And in that report, there is nothing written by the National Park Service ranger that accompanied the FBI agent to interview the Key family. There is nothing in that file about the Key family sighting.
Huh.
Nothing. Now, what McCarter told me is that I said, well, how could the Key family, their son, misinterpret a man for a bear? That's a hard misinterpretation.
It's a big misinterpretation.
He told me that there are a series of wild men, meaning people like you and me who live off the grid, that wear animal pelts up there in the woods, and the Park Service can't control it. And he said at the time, about a year or two before Dennis disappeared, a Park Service ranger was attacked by one of these people and nearly killed because the person that attacked the ranger was armed. But at the time, the National Park Service enforcement rangers were not armed. So his feeling was that one of these wild people that lived up there took Dennis, but he goes, it's just conjecture, but I do still think he was abducted.
So let's now, get in. Go ahead.
One more thing I want to say about this is sure. that when this book came out, this was the cornerstone case, and it was all backed with fact because I had the news articles, I had the reports, I had everything laid out to a key, and I had Dwight McCarter's testimony. So we held a press conference in Knoxville, and we got every major news organization, ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox to come. And they asked every question under the sun. And we had displays. We laid it out perfectly. It was just about the Dennis disappearance. And do you know, all of them left except one news agency. And this one reporter said, Dave, I got to tell you, this will never make the air. I go, why is that? He goes, it just won't ever make it. The park means too much to this local community. And what it means is it means $800 million a year to the local area around the city of Knoxville and the surrounding region. And do you know, George, nothing about this ever made the press.
It's the greatest kept secret out there, I bet.
It is.
All right, let's talk before the calls here, David, about some possibilities. Let me throw them your way, and you give us a quick comment or two. Some sick series of serial killers or killers are roaming the parks, primarily Yosemite, but they're out there. Maybe one, maybe several, maybe a cult group. What do you think?
I don't think so. I think that's kind of an interesting light that might want to fit into people's comfort zone. But if that was the case, I believe canines would attract them at this point. I think that helicopters with FLIR that came into the area looking for the victims would have also found the suspect. FLIR, meaning forward-looking infrared radar, brought in on almost every case we have, and nothing was ever found on FLIR in the area.
All right, now let's talk about, let me ask you, Bigfoot, Sasquatch.
Well, that's always something that a lot of people bring up, but, you know, the one thing about this, George, I think that everyone needs to understand, and we understand this at a high level, is that if there is an entity or something doing this, that you realize they do it with 100% effective rate? Because I've never had a report about anything on a near miss or anyone being abducted in a park and then being dumped and then the person coming forward saying that they were taken under this way.
Yeah.
So 100% effective rate, if it's happening like that.
ETs or UFOs? Does anybody report seeing UFOs in the area?
So there's something that was brought up to me by someone in MUFON not too long ago. And they said, Dave, there's two kinds of people or entities that we would look at like this. And they read the books and they contacted me and they said, there's terrestrial and there's extraterrestrial. And part of that terrestrial is something else called reptoids. Now, I don't know anything about all this, and I'm just listening. And they said, well, that's something that you really ought to look at because it was their belief that there had been a lot of sightings in a lot of the areas where these things have happened.
This is just remarkable. Okay, so the cults you're ruling out, Sasquatch, probably ruling out these thunderbirds, these large birds we hear swooping down, picking these people up. Does anybody see them?
You know, I've had people send me those same questions, but I never hear about them. You know, the one thing in the list of all the possibilities that to me holds the most weight, but I'm not saying I believe this, but there's just a coincidental factor, is demons. And many of the people I have written about have disappeared in areas with devil in the name. Devil's Gulch, Devil's Lookout, Twin Devil's Lakes. And then people have come back and said, well, it's demons then. Well, what I don't know, but I'd love to know, is how these areas got their name.
So let's assume, David, for a moment, that in these parks, for whatever reason, there is some kind of portal or some kind of opening to another dimension that demons may exist in. And they come through this window, grab the person, and in most cases, keeps them, takes them. Maybe?
Who am I to say no, and who am I to say yes?
Possible?
Like I said, there is more of a coincidental factor here than randomness with these people disappearing in these areas with these names devil. And I think it would be a consensus opinion amongst us that it comes up more than it should.
What other possibilities are out there that we've missed? You know, we talked about, oh, what about drug cartels? Now, that doesn't make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't. And I don't want to minimize it for the people who think that way, but you got to remember that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of searchers that go into an area. You've got flyovers with FLIR. You've got canines going in. And there's nothing about a drug cartel other than the horrific odor of humans who don't bathe in that same area. Canines are going to go right into that area. There's going to be overflights in that area. Those people don't want anything to do with someone looking around a grow site or a lab. And there's nothing about that that makes sense.
Why would the military show up in some cases, these Green Berets?
Boy, George, there's a great, great, great question that baffles us daily. And I have no idea. You know, the one thing that a listener wrote to me a while back and said, well, the other thing about Green Berets is they have to sign a secrecy oath, whereas National Guards people don't. I don't know if that makes any sense. I don't know if it's true, but I was just sent that.
Let's go to Andy in Los Angeles. Well, we're going to do that after the break. My gosh, they're calling like crazy here, David. So we'll get into that. And, of course, your book, Missing 411, it's available all over the place, I assume?
You know, I would advise people not to go to Amazon.com. They're asking double the price on Amazon. Some resellers buy it from us, unknown to us, and then are just ripping people off on Amazon. We charge one price. Amazon charges double. So don't go there.
Okay. Stay with us. David Politis with us. We'll be back with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we have a split show for you. William Engdahl joins us as we talk about the elite trying to take over the world's energy resources. Then Amit Goswami joins us. God is not dead. So I'm looking forward to that on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. David Politis with us. And David, let's look at a couple more of these theories and we'll take these calls as they line up for you. If they're demonic, some kind of force, why kill some and leave others?
Boy, George, you're outside the realm of my expertise. I like to claim that I do thorough research and I can dig deep and keep an open mind on things, but I really don't know a lot about that area, so I really couldn't comment with any level of credibility.
Okay. But you think, of all the possibilities, you think, if I'm reading you right, that it could be demonic?
Well, no, I just am. I won't ignore the obvious when people.
Or are you still baffled?
Yeah, it's baffling to me.
Yeah, it's baffling to everybody. It's a bizarre case. Yeah, I have to rule out a bear or an animal. They would have torn the clothes to shreds, right?
Well, they would have torn the clothes to shreds. Search and rescue would have brought people in. The trackers would have tracked the animal. If a person's ever attacked by an animal, there's usually a scene there. There's blood, hair. And like you said, there's clothing.
And bloodhounds aren't scared of finding that scent.
No, no. In fact, when they bring in trackers, they bring in specially trained dogs at times to track down cougars and bears.
Why do you think there is such silence about this, what I would consider to be a huge national, maybe international story?
You know, someone sent me a note tonight that was pretty interesting, and he sent me notes over the years, a smart guy. He said, you know, Dave, the essence of silence surrounding the Park Service and the FBI, the FBI is interested enough in these cases that they monitor it, but they won't give you any information. And the Park Service obviously must know, because they're not stupid, that they're not releasing any data either. And as I've told people in the past, the FBI has a team of profilers out in Virginia. And every report that comes through on a case, it gets sent to a profiler, and they look at it from 50,000 feet. And if there is consistency amongst cases, as we found, I know they found it.
To the phones we now go. Andy's in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program, Andy. Go ahead.
Yeah, great show, George. David, I remember on the last show that you were on with George, you mentioned the fact that the people who had transponders on have never been abducted. People who wore bright colors tended to be abducted. But my question to you specifically is, have any individuals been abducted from the Angeles National Forest, where they suddenly disappeared, or the Oroville Wilderness area, where I had an experience? And real briefly, I was new in California over 25 years ago. I was walking down a mountain trail with two dogs. One was a Samoyed Husky, and one was an Irish Setter. The Irish Setter was behind me. The Samoyed was in front of me. We're walking down this narrow trail with a cliff that fell several hundred feet down to my right, and the mountain to my left. And suddenly I stopped, and my dog behind me, my Irish Setter, was gone. So I turned around, and I backtracked real slowly, and I noticed that the dog had dropped down a steep, what you call, I guess it was like a cliff. It had one paw against the mountainside and one paw against the ledge. And I started to panic. I knew if I panicked, it was all over. So I told the dog, just hang in there. I'll be right back. So I walked like 20, 25 feet away from the dog, then ran down to my Thunderbird, which was parked maybe 1,000 feet away. And to make a long story short, when I get to my car, I flip open my trunk, pull out my rope. I had quite a bit of heavy-duty rope, and my plan was to try to rescue the dog that way, because he was down like 6 feet down on that ledge. And all of a sudden, when I closed the hood of the car and I started to go towards back to the trail, the dog come running to me, the Irish Setter, with its tail wagging like crazy. Now, that was a physical impossibility for that dog to climb back up, because it was a steep drop. And what I'm trying to say is, I believe there are forces, energies, powers around us, especially in the wilderness areas, that we know nothing about. And I think some of those forces are powerful and protective, looking out for us. And I believe also that there are some evil forces out there that are looking like predators to destroy and to kill innocent ones. And finally, do you notice a pattern with the number of kids that were found alive as opposed to those that were unfortunately found deceased? And what observation do you make of that? And I'll take your answer off the end. Thanks for your caring for these people. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Go ahead.
Nope. There's no pattern between alive versus deceased children, but his question about the Angeles National Forest, there is a cluster of disappearances there, and in fact, there's a pretty famous case of an L.A. County sheriff off duty. His last name was Ajay, A-U-J-A-Y. he drove up to an area called the Devil's Punch Bowl.
Oh, here we go.
And this is on the northeast side of the Angeles Forest. And he went in there running, parked his truck, told his wife he'd be back in an hour and a half, never came back, was never found. One of several people in that cluster in Angeles that have never been found.
You can only imagine, David, the horror that these people who have been taken must be going through.
Yeah, and truthfully, George, I think about this all the time. It haunts me.
It is haunting. It's chilling. And what you don't know is, are they alive somewhere in some other region, some place, some dimension? Who knows?
Exactly.
Let's go to David in Biloxi, Mississippi on the wild card line. David, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, David, you said Green Berets went out. I was a Green Beret, and I went on 3 searches. What kind of questions you got?
So explain the searches.
Okay, when we go on the searches, one of the reasons that we don't want anybody around, for one thing, is it makes it more difficult to search an area. Because you have all these people going through the trees, you can't track the spore properly for that individual. So a lot of times when we go in their area, we tell them straight up right off the bat, if we're going to search, we don't want anybody around. You know, we want to do it on our own.
Where did you do the search at?
Okay, I did 1 in North Carolina and 2 in Washington State.
What years?
I did 1 in 86 in North Carolina, and then in 90 and 91 in Washington State.
What were you searching for, David?
People. On 2 occasions, 2 people were missing. We found 2 people on 1 of them, and the 3rd time, we never found that 3rd person. The person in North Carolina, we never found.
Is it standard procedure to call in the Green Berets to do this?
No. It's a special occasion. I don't know what. On special event, I don't know how to say it, but it's specially requested to the Forest Service. And then one of the reasons they don't release the paperwork is because it has the names of our individual team members on it.
Right.
And that's classified. So you cannot get those reports. They're not going to release them to you because it actually has the names of the individual team members on them.
Where were you stationed at for the Washington cases?
I was at Fort Lewis, 10th Special Forces.
Did you folks talk about these cases afterward, David? Did you try to come up with some theories on why they were missing?
2 of them, the ones that we found, like I said, we found the ones in Washington State.
Yeah.
They had just wandered off.
That happens.
And we found them. But the one in North Carolina, we never found no trace or anything from where the individual was supposed to have been. We went in the area. We spent 2.5 days, I think, looking for the individual.
Jeez.
We covered probably 25 square miles, and we never found anything, no sign, nothing. You know, and we were called in by the Forestry Service out of the Aurora National Forest for the individual that disappeared, and we never saw anything.
Do you ever have any idea why you guys would be called instead of National Guard or National Guard?
Well, because, like I said, sometimes it's our expertise is, you know, for tracking. The guard's not particularly trained on tracking somebody. The guard, you know, they just kind of go on a mass line and they go tromping through the woods and, you know, they look, you know what I'm talking about when you get online and search like that. Well, we don't do that. Like I said, we track. Like we go an enemy situation, if we're looking for somebody, we look for that individual's tracks, and we track them that way. But it's, like I said, it's next to impossible to do if you've already had 100 or 200 people go to that area because you can't track that person because you've had so many, just everything spoiled, the spore is spoiled. See what
okay.
I'm saying?
All right, David, thanks. It's worth being noted. The strange part is, as you've pointed out here, David, they're called in on the first place. Very strange. Indeed. These cases, David, when you said that they went in streaks and intervals, where are we now? Are we in the middle of one of these swarms?
That's a great question. In 2013, there were more people that disappeared under our profile than in any other year for the last 28 years.
Hmm. And how about now?
It's continuing.
It is continuing. High pace?
Yeah, it is.
Same kind of episodes, just bizarre disappearances. You know.
Well, the most current one that's on the website is a man named Boucher, Jeffrey Boucher. He was a high school teacher in Whitby, Ontario. He lived right on one of the Great Lakes. And every morning for 20 years, the man got up, 5 o'clock in the morning, put on his running shoes, his clothes, and he went for an hour and a half run. And just like that, he did, and he never came back. How that qualifies is that he always ran through a conservation area that was swampy.
Uh-huh. Let's go next to Harry in Port Huron, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hey, Harry, go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. I thank God you had this subject tonight, George. This has been something that's been on my mind for a while now. And David, I'm really concerned, as you are and everybody else, about the abductions, whether they're kids or whoever. We've had some here in Michigan recently. And all I can say is, isn't there some kind of a technology or something that we can track our kids or, you know, our friends or whoever, so we can catch this happening? We can see it happening at the moment and intersect it.
You know, I wish there was. David, the caller a while back, touched on, or not David, it was the one before him, asked about carrying personal locator transponders.
Yeah. Andy.
Yeah, there's been one person that we know about disappeared on the outskirts of Yosemite carrying a transponder. There's been never anyone that we know about that was carrying a transponder and a firearm that disappeared. Everywhere I go in the woods, I carry a transponder and a firearm. And as far as the technology about catching something like this in the act, you know, canines are really, really good at tracking scent. And if they don't want to or they can't pick up a scent, we're not sure it's there.
And what's so bizarre, David, is the speed at how these kids primarily disappear. It's like, I mean, you turn your head for an instant, they're gone.
And you got to remember that the cases we cited here tonight are just a small fraction of what's in the books. This is just an example of the enormity that goes on and you never hear about.
No.
But there's several cases where kids have been found thousands of feet above in the mountains where they disappeared and miles and miles and miles away.
And how in the heck did they get there? But that one case, the Martin case about being on the shoulder, something that they spotted?
Yes.
That's bizarre.
That is.
Let's go to Michael. I'm sorry. Go ahead, David.
No, go ahead, George.
All right. We'll grab Michael in Mill Creek, Washington, while we still have time for a couple more calls. Go ahead, Michael.
How's it going, George? Long time no talk.
Thank you, Mike.
Third time calling. Proud to say that. It's actually a great pleasure to talk to you and Mr. David Politis. I said his last name correctly. I'm sorry if I butchered it.
No, you did it well.
Well, anyways, to my point, my personal theory on the disappearances of national parks would be Sasquatch. And I know that might sound a little out there. I know you've come across that theory in your, you know, research. But the reason being is, you know, look at the territory. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And or legends have it. I mean, these creatures are spotted in these areas, especially Washington, Oregon, and some parts in California, northern Arizona.
That's always that possibility. And if you can, David, explain these screeches, these screams that people hear.
You know, I've kind of done the best I can, but sometimes they're heard and they're deafening and people can't mimic it. And they just describe it as something they've never heard before. A lot of forestry people say, well, it could be a mountain lion, but I don't know because I'm not hearing it.
But it's definitely not coming from the victim, right?
Exactly.
Gosh, that just adds to the strangeness of all of this. John is in Bismarck, Illinois. John, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hi. It's an honor to be on your show.
You're welcome.
My best friend and I were hunting in 1972. northeast of Danville, Illinois, in a real remote area. We saw a bird of a giant species that had a wingspan of at least 20 feet by my calculations. The width of the wings was between 5 and 6 feet. It took over 30 years to identify this bird, which I identified it, in my opinion, as the bird Argentavis. And, I mean, neither of us could believe our eyes. This bird was so gigantic. So my feeling is that some of these abductions are from thunderbirds like what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are probably from eagles. And I'm currently writing a book on the subject of thunderbirds myself. So, and I'm also on the History Channel film called Birdzilla, which would tend to give you a better idea of what we're talking about.
All right, great. When that book's complete, by the way, John, you get back to us, because I'd like to talk with you more about thunderbirds. But I would guess that these, if they were birds involved in this, David, those would be spotted. That's not something that can hide or disappear, especially if it picks up a kid, as some have reportedly done, and flies away. I think somebody would see that, don't you?
Well, I think they might see it. But on top of that, I think the kid would be screaming his head off.
Yeah, he would. Well, that, you know what? That's an interesting situation too. The kid is gone, and he's silent. He's quiet. Maybe they muffle him. I don't know, but that is weird too. The whole thing is strange. Well, David, do stay in touch with us and constantly give us updates on this. Okay?
George, it was my pleasure, and I appreciate the opportunity.
This is an incredible story, Missing 411, North America and beyond. Best bet is to get to David's website, which is canammissing.com, which we've got linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. As he said, Amazon is not discounting this one. Private sellers have got the price way, way up. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.